Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as God-free as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We announce our major court victory, ending a religious test to register to vote in Alabama.
Then we speak with unabashed atheist Ron Reagan
about why he's not afraid of burning in hell and much more.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. More than 4 million new cases of COVID-19 were reported in the last week, including more than 71,000 deaths, an 11% increase, the World Health Organization, WHO, has said. In its latest weekly update on the coronavirus late on Tuesday evening, the UN Health Agency reported that the largest increases in case incidents were in India and the Western Pacific. All regions except for Africa reported increases in the number of deaths, with the largest increase from the Southeast Asia region, up 46%. By country, India and Brazil saw more than 500,000 new cases of infection each, followed by the United States with over 444,000 cases, Turkey with nearly 266,000, and France over 244,000. To the issue of COVID-19 vaccinations for people displaced by conflict and natural disaster, and a warning that many are missing out on the life-saving jabs, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, said on Wednesday. Leading the appeal for fairer access to vaccines, UNHCR Chief Filippo Grandi criticized the My Country First approach that had created blatant imbalances and left poorer countries unprotected from the coronavirus. It's a counterproductive and short-sighted approach, Mr. Grandi insisted, before commending the 20 countries that are known to have begun vaccinating refugees on an equal footing to citizens. Among them, Serbia and Nepal, Rwanda and Jordan. More than 8 in 10 of the world's refugees are in low- and middle-income countries, which urgently need more support to address the health needs of their nationals and those seeking international protection. More must be done to tackle hate speech and violence against minorities, including the Roma and Sinti, who've been scapegoated for spreading the COVID-19 virus, a leading rights expert has said. Ahead of International Roma Day on Thursday, the 8th of April, UN Special Rapporteur Fernand de Varennes urged states to control the spread of inflammatory comments on social media. Online hate speech violates international human rights obligations and can lead to violence against Sinti, Roma and other minorities, the independent rights expert said. His comments come 50 years since the first World Roma Congress in London. It was seen as a push for unity by the minority and an attempt to build a common ethnic identity. Despite greater international recognition for the Roma today, Mr. de Varennes highlighted a lack of progress in countering hate speech both online and in mainstream media, including by unnamed public authorities who not only condoned but actively took part in such vitriol. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Hold on. I missed my cue. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. Here we go.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Happy spring. We have birds chirping outside our window today. My daffodils are, half of them are now blooming. And Dan, I predict by the end of today, the first tulips.
When I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is the April 8th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. We're hosting this show from our Safe at Home studio in Madison, Wisconsin, while once again, the mellifluous Buzz Kemper is producing and engineering the show from Audio for the Arts. That's his recording studio down near the Wisconsin State Capitol.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And FFRF has two purposes: to keep religion out of government and to educate the public, that is you, about the views of non-believers. And we're over 35,000 members. We would love to have you join us. If you're not a member, you may be seeing our Ron Reagan commercials again on Rachel Maddow this week and next week. You can ask for information and a sample of our newspaper and our brochure about 40-plus years of activism at FFRF.org. So, Dan, do you have a joke for me today?
I do have a joke. William Dusenberry sent us this joke. An Irish Sunday school teacher said, "I was testing children in my Dublin Sunday school class to see if they understood the concept of getting to heaven. I asked them, if I sold my house and my car and had a big garage sale and gave all my money to the church, would that get me into heaven? No, the children answered. If I cleaned the church every day and mowed the garden and kept everything tidy, would that get me into heaven? Again, the answer was, no. If I gave sweets to all the children and loved my husband, would that get me into heaven? Again, the children all said, no. I was just bursting with pride for them, and I continued, then how can I get to heaven? And a little boy in the back row shouted, you've got to be frickin' dead.
All right. Well, everyone wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
So in the second half of today's show, we're going to hear from someone who is not worried about the afterlife, Ron Reagan. He's the son of President Ronald and Nancy Reagan, who calls himself an unabashed atheist, unafraid of burning in hell, as he says in that TV ad that he made for FFRF.
And before that, we'll talk with FFRF attorney Liz Cavell about how we just won a major court case stopping the state of Alabama from requiring a religious oath in order to register to vote. This is a significant victory, not just for state church separation, but also for voting rights.
Today is Yip Harburg's birthday. Yip Harburg is the songwriter who wrote the words to Over the Rainbow and many other popular songs. He was born April 8, 1896. Yip Harburg was a lifelong agnostic and humanist whose optimistic lyrics were always witty and often irreverent. Between segments today, we're going to hear music from songs for which Yip Harburg wrote the lyrics, including April in Paris, Over the Rainbow, Brother Can You Spare a Dime, and Finian's Rainbow.
And we'll also hear a song by Yip Harburg sung in his own voice. Now, what do we have today, this week on Free Thought Matters?
Free Thought Matters, our TV show. Our guest this week is Jessica Ahlquist. Jessica's the brave teenager who filed a lawsuit in 2012 against her Rhode Island high school to remove a religious prayer from its auditorium. She won that lawsuit with the assistance of the ACLU.
And she recaps this historic case, and 9 years later, although she looks the same, she reflects on how it changed her life.
After the new school year started, they started to have these meetings to discuss whether or not the prayer was going to stay or be removed. And I got involved in those, and I presented myself as an atheist to a room of people who had showed up to attend this meeting. And I didn't know quite what that was going to mean, using that word to describe myself at that time in that place. And someone audibly gasped when I said that I was an atheist, and I was called a witch.
Jessica Ahlquist was called more than a witch. A state legislator called her an evil little thing. You can watch that entire captivating interview with Jessica Ahlquist this Sunday on broadcast TV in a number of cities, or you can watch on YouTube. You can go to our website under the news link to see if it's available in your cities on Sundays.
And you can just type in YouTube, Free Thought Matters.
So we do want to quickly, before we bring on Liz Cavell to talk about our new court victory, we want to talk about our ad this week in the New York Times. And it's an ad on the anniversary, the 3-month anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. calling it a faith-based initiative and asking us to return from, you know, it says One Nation Under God, and it shows a picture of religious demonstrators praying in, with a big wooden cross in front of the Capitol. And Dan, do you want to read a little bit of it?
One Nation Under God. 3 months ago, the resurrection at the U.S. Capitol showed what One Nation Under God looks like.
The insurrection, Dan.
Many insurrectionists. What did I say?
Okay, it's funny. You said resurrection.
Oh, I said it wrong. The insurrection. Many insurrectionists believe they were answering a call to protect God's anointed. Crosses and Bibles, banners saying, In God We Trust, Jesus 2020 and Jesus Saves, mingled with racist symbols. Christian prayers were delivered at the rally en route to the Capitol and inside the Senate chamber, which was invaded in Christ's holy name. Christian nationalism, often allied with white supremacy, conflates being Christian with being a true American. It seeks to replace democratic principles with what it claims is God's word. This political identity movement, embraced by a number of public officials who insist that America is a Christian nation, poses a continuing threat to civil liberties and our secular government. Freedom depends on free thinkers. Join FFRF in our essential work so that reason and our secular constitution will prevail.
Yes, so let's return to E Pluribus Unum and One Nation Indivisible. No under God in there. Briefly, we want to just mention, of course, that Arkansas became the first state this week to outlaw gender-affirming treatment for trans youth. Surprisingly, the Republican governor vetoed this intrusive legislation because it's really a medical issue between physicians and teenagers, but it was overridden. And you may want to read Ryan Jane's comprehensive blog for the Freedom From Religion Foundation last week on the nationwide assaults. There are now over 80 bad bills at the state level gunning for trans people. They're the scapegoat right now with the Christian nationalists and the religious right. So we are paying a lot of attention to that. If you're a member, you may be getting action alerts from us on these bad bills.
And some of you are being very effective. There's some good news out of Arizona, an Arizona bill that would prohibit an abortion based on a genetic abnormality came up one vote short on Wednesday. Senator Tyler, a Republican from Mesa, sided with all the Democrats voting against SB 1457, which would have made it a crime for a doctor to terminate a pregnancy knowing it's being sought because of a genetic abnormality of a crime.
And one more news highlight this week before we bring on Liz Cavell, and that is that there was a new study showing an extraordinary winning streak for religion at the U.S. Supreme Court, and this is something we've talked about a lot. And this was a study by Lee Epstein of Washington University in St. Louis and Eric Posner from the University of Chicago. And what they found was that 81% of the cases on religion under the Roberts Court have been pro-religion. Usually the courts have been pro-minority rights on religion, and these are all pro-majority rights for religion, and it's a startling jump. They said under Chief Justice Earl Warren, that was 53-69. The court just supported religion 46% of the time. Now we see 81%. We saw three terrible decisions last summer by the Supreme Court creating precedent that kind of wrecks our Establishment Clause. We are holding our breath on the next big case we're awaiting, which has to do with foster care and the Catholic social services wanting to discriminate yet get public funding. So
we have a lot of work.
Yeah, we have a lot of work, and we need court reform. We'll be talking more about that next week. And now we want to bring on Liz Cavell, one of our longtime attorneys. Liz, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is my first time being on remotely and not in studio, but I'm calling from my house in Madison.
Yeah, I forgot that. Well, it's been a long pandemic. So, Liz,
exactly.
You were one of the co-counsel on this winning case that we just announced yesterday at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Tell us what was going on in Alabama and what we did about it.
Yeah, so this was a lawsuit that FFRF filed last October. We sued on behalf of four plaintiffs, all of them citizens in Alabama who wanted to register to vote but objected to the religious oath on all of the channels that citizens can register to vote. So the paper forms and the online registration portal both required citizens to swear, so help me God, that all of the voter registration information is true. So FFRF did what we always do, which is try to resolve the issue and engage cooperation from, in this case, the Secretary of State's Office of Alabama, to secularize the oath. Our plaintiffs, one of our plaintiffs was told by his registrar that he had no choice but to sign the registration form with the oath as is. So basically either swear the religious oath or not be allowed to submit his registration to vote.
And Liz, that was our lead plaintiff, correct, Randall Cragen, who's an atheist and a professor. And he tried, of course, it's in the midst of the pandemic when he wants to vote in the to register to vote for the presidential election. And he was totally denied the right to vote, correct?
That's right. So he was seeking to submit his registration form by either striking out the so help me God language, or he was seeking an opportunity to just affirm, you know, solemnly affirm the veracity of his form. And he was directly told by his director of elections that there was no legal way he could register to vote without signing the oath as is, which required swearing to God.
And he was trying to do this online, of course, during the pandemic. So he got an email back denying him. So
that's right.
That was pretty good evidence of discrimination for us. We had some other plaintiffs who have since been able to use the new form to register to vote, which is great. But I'm getting ahead of the story. So then we filed suit last October, correct?
We did. So the election officials wouldn't do anything to change the forms or even change the options available to voters. FFRF sued. Again, this was October, so this is a pretty quick resolution of litigation for us. And things pretty much went the way that they should go, which is the state was sued. It kind of led to some negotiating with state officials where, you know, they realized that they clearly need to provide some sort of secular means of registering to vote. Otherwise, they're blatantly violating the constitutional rights of our plaintiffs and anyone like them. So they did agree to alter all of their printed forms and alter their online language when you register to vote online to reflect basically an avenue for citizens who don't want to swear a religious oath to just affirm rather than swear. So it's kind of like a checkbox where you can use the language that you prefer and register to vote without violating your conscience.
It's too bad they had to keep the religious language. They are the only state that, as far as I know, had that kind of language. But now it says optional. Because of a sincerely held belief, I decline to include the final four words of the oath above. So you just check that box. So now you can do that online, or we waited until this week, correct, Liz, until we knew that all of the old forms had been removed and the new forms had been printed for people who were going in person to register to vote, correct?
That's right. So, of course, we agreed to this resolution, but then, of course, it's an administrative feat to print new forms. They had to educate, you know, obviously elections are decentralized into counties, and they had to educate all of the counties, the state's county registrars, print and disseminate all these new voter registration forms and update the website. And so all of that took a little bit of time, but we did finally dismiss the lawsuit based on our victory.
Yes, well, and congratulations for your role in this. It was a major victory and made possible by our membership and by people who donate to our legal fund. And now, Dan, what's coming up in the next segment?
Well, I want to say, Liz, it's a great victory for state jurisdiction separation as well as for voters' rights. So thank you for all your work. We have to take a break. I think you can hear the music. After the break, we're going to hear the legendary lyricist Yip Harburg sing one of his own songs. And then we're going to hear an interview with Ron Reagan, the son of former President Ronald Reagan. He'll tell us why he is an atheist. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's the Bill of Rights. 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 The Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, and that is Paul Robeson singing the Bill of Rights, right from the Constitution. The music was written by the freethinker Jay Gorney. Paul Robeson was born April the 9th, 1898, and he called for natural, not supernatural, solutions during his lifetime of activism against inequality and oppression.
As we mentioned earlier, we promised that today is the birthday of songwriter Yip Harburg, who wrote the lyrics to Over the Rainbow, April in Paris, Paper Moon, many other popular songs. His first big hit, of course, was during the Depression with composer Jay Gorney, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
In 1932, while Franklin Roosevelt was running for president, calling for optimistic songs like Happy Days Are Here Again, Yip and Jay decided to write an honest song that reflected the reality in the streets. That song became a huge national hit. Here is Yip Harburg himself introducing and singing Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
I, too, was a fellow hitchhiker on the Great American Dream Machine. It was a swell ride, somewhat like a roller coaster, up to high, full peaks and down to low, bare bottoms. But a swell ride, hell-bent for happiness on a road which we thought was paved with gold. But alas, turned out to be a yellow brick road. And so, in 1930, when the dream machine was derailed and the engine wrecked, I saw executives driving taxis, engineers selling apples, skilled workers and veterans standing in bread lines. They were not people in revolt or angry, but baffled, bewildered that this big, powerful dream machine could collapse so utterly. The lyric I wrote to Jay Gorney's music was not for an underling asking for a handout, but for a proud man asking a vital question. They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built that tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell. Full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell. I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare us a dime?
Yip Harburg singing his own song. A dime in 1932 was worth about $2 in today's economy, but this is a very relevant song during the pandemic where we see the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Yip Harburg also wrote poetry, and we were privileged to be able to co-publish with the Yip Harburg Foundation a book called Rhymes for the Irreverent, which you can find on our website, fffrf.org/shop. So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from Ron Reagan in just a couple of minutes, the son of former President Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan, telling us why he is an unabashed atheist, not afraid of burning in hell. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back in just a minute.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at fffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. 1 year ago, we were planning to fly to Seattle to interview Ron Reagan for our TV show, Free Thought Matters. But because of the coronavirus, it was becoming really serious at that time, we had to cancel those flights. And we had to scramble to make other arrangements. And we found a Seattle studio with satellite capabilities. Ron Reagan was our very first remote pandemic interview.
So let's listen to this very compelling interview, fun interview with Ron Reagan.
And now we're very pleased to introduce today's guest, Ron Reagan. He's, of course, the son of Nancy and President Ronald Reagan. He's had a dancing career, including at the Joffrey Ballet, and Ron has worked as a broadcast and print journalist and TV and radio commentator. And Ron's been a near lifelong atheist.
In 2004, Ron made a historic address to the Democratic National Convention on behalf of stem cell research, where he noted,
"But it does not follow that the theology of a few should be allowed to forestall the health and well-being of the many."
The theology of the few should not forestall the health of the many. Ron is joining us via satellite hookup from Seattle. So, Ron, welcome to Free Thought Matters.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it very much. I'm sorry you guys couldn't come out to Seattle, but under the circumstances, I think getting onto an airplane would probably be a mistake.
So, Ron, I think many of our viewers will wonder how you became such an outspoken, unabashed atheist growing up in the family of Nancy and Ronald Reagan.
Well, you know, you guys have been good enough to have me come and speak a couple of times before the foundation. And I always feel a little funny doing that because I've been an atheist all my life and I didn't have to struggle with it. And I never know quite what to say to you, to the foundation, as you've probably gathered hearing me talk a couple of times. It seems to me that there are probably two different kinds of atheists. There are the atheists who, some of whom may even be clergy, who have really struggled with this and had a crisis of faith and have taken steps along the way to go from faith to atheism. I, on the other hand, belong to this other group, which as children just decided this isn't real, this can't possibly be true, and just sort of blew it off, you know, from the get-go. I was probably 10 years old, I imagine, when I decided just internally that I didn't believe in a divine, in a presence in the universe, didn't believe in the supernatural anymore. And that's very easy for a child. You know, children are very binary. Children, something is either true or it is not. And at about the time that you discover that Santa Claus is not real, you begin wondering about God. At least many children do. I did. You know, it's another white guy with a beard who, you know, knows if you've been naughty or nice and has the power to punish or to reward. And he lives, you know, that way in some direction. And you discover that Santa Claus is a figment of people's imagination. And then you begin to realize that other bearded guy, too. You know, that doesn't make any sense. So Santa Claus is the great enemy, as we know, of religious belief, I think. He undermines many children's religious beliefs.
So I think you told us that you told your parents at about 10 or 12 that you weren't going to go to church anymore. And how did they react?
At age 12, I finally decided I can't, you know, sit there in church anymore and, you know, and do this. It's hypocritical, among other things. And so I told, at age 12, I told my father. He came into the bedroom one day, on Sunday morning. We were going to pile into the car and head off to the Bel Air Presbyterian Church. Came in and said, you know, get dressed. Come on. Put your suit on. We're going to church. And I said, I'm not going. And he didn't even hear that. That was so unthinkable to him that he was heading out the door and he just over his shoulder said, you know, no, come on, get dressed, we're going. And I said, I called after him, I said, I'm not going. I'm done with that, I'm not going. And he was wise enough to not try and strong arm me into it. He just sort of let it go. They went to church, they came back, and then he tried to, you know, get into it with me, of course, and question me about this. And I was adamant that I did not believe what he believed. I thought it would be hypocritical for me to go. It would be disrespectful to his church, too, for me to sit there and pretend that I believed something that I did not. And so I don't know if I would say that he accepted this. He was very troubled by it. But again, he knew not to try and force me to go to church. He did eventually bring the pastor from the church, a fellow named Don Mumma, who was the preacher at the Bel Air Presbyterian Church. He arrived in my living room one afternoon. I came in from playing or running around doing whatever I was doing, and there was Don Mumma. And he was clearly there to try and convince me to come back to the church. And I thought, well, now I've got to deal with a professional here. This is going to be a real challenge for me. But it didn't take but 5 or 10 minutes before we'd stop talking about God and we're talking about UCLA football, which Don used to play. So, and he later admitted to me, years later, how embarrassed he'd been by the whole thing. So, yeah, he didn't succeed any more than my father did.
When I was 10 years old, 12 years old, I was a true believer. I didn't have the courage or even the thought to criticize or to question. It took me into my 30s, and like you say, I was one of those clergy who eventually saw the light. But when your dad was president, was there any other pushback? Was there anybody else who was critical of you or the family, or was that just under the radar?
Well, when my father became president, of course, then you find yourself being interviewed by people who are always looking for some sort of wedge to put between you and, you know, and the president, your father. I was being interviewed by the New York Times Magazine, and an inevitable question that always comes up when you're in my circumstance is, well, are you going to get into politics? Are you going to run for office? And the answer has always been no. I have no interest in that. I'm not a politician. But that would rarely satisfy people, and so they'd keep pushing. So I thought, well, I know a way to end this discussion, this line of questioning. I said, no, I have no interest in that. And besides, I'm an atheist, so I couldn't be elected to any high office anyway. Okay, that did end that line of questioning, but people read this, and people, some of whom were friends of mine, very upset about this. I got letters from people. I got, you know, how could you say this? And it surprised me, I had to say, because I didn't really realize until then that people would care what anybody else believed. I didn't much care what people's religious beliefs were, unless they were somehow being imposed on me. So I didn't really assume that anybody would care that I didn't believe what they believed. But I found out differently. They do indeed. And I think that for religionists, atheism is such a troubling thing, not for the reasons they would like you to believe, that they really, you know, they hate the sin but love the sinner, they want you to go to heaven with them and all of that sort of thing. I think it just undercuts their beliefs so effectively that they can't stand the atheist. There's a psychology going on here, and I think it would be very useful for all of us, for all of our species, to understand the psychology of religious belief. Clearly, it helps in some way. It must have had some evolutionary advantage, probably for groups, that there was a cohesive story that they all told each other, and it bound them together. Otherwise, you know, evolution would have done away with religious belief by now. Nevertheless, it's not so useful now. We don't live in small tribes that are constantly being threatened by the, you know, people who live in the next valley over and who worship a different god. That's not exactly what's happening now. We know a lot more than we used to. There is a psychology, though, that where religionists feel very, very threatened by somebody's lack of belief, and they react very strongly to it, very harshly.
But I think I know one reason, Ron, why there was a lot of attention when you said you were an atheist, because very few people were coming out publicly as atheists. You were one of the more prominent people in the 80s, even in the 90s, who would make that unabashed statement. And that's how you got our attention. And then, of course, when you gave that speech before the Democratic National Convention on stem cell research, and we showed an excerpt of that, I think it takes a lot of courage, what you've done.
I don't feel terribly brave talking about this kind of thing. It's just, hey, it's not even a belief, as you know. It's a lack of belief. All I'm saying is a lot of people believe this certain thing. I see no evidence for it, and I don't believe things without evidence or reason. I don't believe in tooth fairies. I don't believe in the Easter Bunny. I don't believe in Santa Claus, and I don't believe in anybody's God. And I like to remind people that everybody is an atheist. You know, let's say most people in the United States who are religionists are Christian. Okay, they don't believe in Allah. They don't believe in Baal. They don't believe in Thor. They don't believe in Odin or anything like that. So everybody is an atheist. Everybody dismisses all the thousands of gods that have come before their God, and they just pick this one God that they want to believe in. I just go one God farther, like most atheists. It's as simple as that. There's no more evidence for this particular God than there is for any of those other thousands of gods out there. You know, you show me evidence, I'll reconsider, but in the absence of evidence, I do not believe.
In the absence of evidence, I do not believe. That's Ron Reagan, and after the break, we're going to hear the rest of that fascinating interview with Ron Reagan. I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back in just a minute with more
Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. And let's continue listening to the rest of our interview with Ron Reagan.
So the obvious question then is, if you don't believe in a God, how can you be a good person?
You know, you can be a good person the way everybody else is a good person. All those holy books that have some rather dubious ethical pronouncements in them, as well as some decent ones. I mean, I think we can all agree in mostly that you should treat other people the way you'd like to be treated, or not treat them the way you wouldn't like to be treated is probably a better way to put it. We all develop our own morality. People wrote those books. And at the time, in 2,000 years ago or so, you know, that was the state of the art of morality as far as those people knew. And so that's what they wrote down. They should have probably paid more attention to the Stoics and the Epicureans at the time, but they didn't. They went with the monotheism and the Old Testament and all the rest of it.
You stated that atheists and non-believers do really have a duty to speak up, though.
Well, I think you do. And I think, you know, if our species is going to survive, it has to move beyond superstition. I don't believe in astrology either. I don't care much if people do, but I'd hate to think that they were directing society based on astrological principles. This is something we have to overcome. You mentioned the speech I gave in 2004 before the Democratic National Committee about stem cell research. I was concerned, of course, about stem cell research, but more broadly than that, I was concerned about the way that people who are often religionists dismiss science as a whole. We see it now with climate change. There are a lot of religious people who say, well, you know, climate change can't be happening. We can't be affecting the climate because, you know, God takes care of that, essentially. And God always changes the climate one way or the other. Well, you know, this is not science. You know, come on, people. We've got a crisis here we need to deal with, and we need to deal with it realistically, and we need to approach it with reason and not superstition. This is the problem. When somebody's private belief, which, you know, people will have their beliefs, we all do, but people's private beliefs find their way into public policy in a way that is really often very destructive. You know, these religious freedom laws, for instance, that are being enacted in various states now. You know, why is it that religious freedom for these people always seems to involve the opportunity to be bigoted towards somebody else? There was a story about a surgeon. Guy arrives at the hospital. His heart is failing. He's a heroin addict, and his heroin habit has destroyed his heart. They perform surgery. They repair his heart. Off he goes. A year later, he's back because, of course, he's continued to use heroin. And the surgeon says, I don't want to perform surgery anymore here. I mean, this guy's just going to go out and he's going to use heroin again, and he's going to be back here in another year, and we're going to be doing this again. It's a waste of our time and our talent and money. So they took it to the hospital ethicist. And the hospital ethicist's point was, I understand why you wouldn't want to perform surgery on this individual. I might not want to perform surgery on him either, but then I didn't choose to become a surgeon. If you bake cakes for a living, if you bake wedding cakes for a living, stop worrying about who it is that's getting married here and just bake cakes. That's what you do. You chose to do this. You might not like all the couples that come in for a wedding cake. That's not your business. You just bake cakes. Bake the cakes. You know, stop worrying about whether they're a gay couple or not. What if they've been divorced? That would be another reason not to bake somebody's wedding cake, I guess, for some religionists. What if they were a mixed-race couple? You can make a case based on the Bible that they shouldn't be getting married either. This is just a road that you do not want to go down, but apparently a lot of these religionists do want to go down this road.
We're so grateful for you generously recording that TV commercial, and you've seen it a lot of times, like on the during the debates and that. And some people said you were the star of the debate. Thank you for doing that and for helping to make FFRF a household name. The ad has run on MSNBC, on Comedy Central, on CNN. From your point of view, I mean, we're hearing from a lot of viewers who love it, but from your point of view, what has the reaction to that ad been like?
Mostly positive. People come up to me on the street and tell me how much they like the ad. There has been some pushback, though. Even people I've known have said that, well, you know, that seemed a little rude, particularly that last line, which is the one that got everybody so excited, the idea of not afraid of burning in hell. You know, why did you have to say that? Weren't you trying to be offensive to people who, religious believers? The answer is no, I wasn't. We actually needed to pick up, you probably know, we needed to add about 3 seconds to the copy. And so, you know, we kept recording it, and it kept coming out 27 seconds. And you know, the more you do it, the faster it gets. Anyway, so it was like, oh, we just got to add some copy. And I said, I'll add a little to the end. And that's what I came up with, not afraid of burning in hell, which is true enough. I'm not afraid of burning in hell. Christians watching the program now, I don't know how many would, but if there were any, ask yourself, if you're a Christian, if you're afraid of burning in a Muslim hell. I bet you're not. I bet you're not losing any sleep about that. And the Muslims aren't worried about burning in your hell either. And the Hindus aren't worrying about burning in your hell. And you're not worried about burning in their multiple hells also. So I just go one hell further. You know, it's like God. I go one God further. I go one hell further. I'm not afraid of your hell either. But this is very disturbing to people because hell gets right to the nub of things, doesn't it? Hell is the stick. Heaven is the carrot. Hell is the stick, and if you take the stick away, well, then the whole project kind of falls apart. And I think religionists instinctively know this. They have to make you scared of hell, or the whole project just falls apart.
So,
sorry.
I feel that people who believe in a hell have a very offensive belief and attitude. So I've been very shocked that national CBS, NBC, ABC have censored the commercial because they don't like that last line. And it seems to me they're kind of blaming the victims. I mean, we're not saying people are going to suffer forever. They are. So why is this offensive?
Well, thank you for saying that, because indeed, what is more offensive? Me saying I don't happen to believe in an eternal afterlife where I'm tortured, you know, with fire and what have you, or you insisting that that's where I'm going to end up? You know, you insisting that I'm going to burn in hell for all of eternity while, you know, presumably you stay upstairs and look down on me with some pleasure as you're sipping, you know, vintage champagne or something. Yeah, that's pretty offensive.
That was Ron Reagan speaking on FFRF's TV show called Free Thought Matters. You can watch that entire episode on YouTube. Just search for Free Thought Matters TV show YouTube, Ron Reagan. Or if you go to our YouTube channel and are on the Free Thought Matters playlist, you can scroll down to episode number 82. And it was a delightful interview. And we have a couple minutes, and I would like to make a pitch for those of you who do not receive Free Thought Today, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's newspaper, to tell you what you're missing and that we would be glad to send you a complimentary copy with no obligation, and we never sell or trade or divulge contact information for anyone who contacts us. And the April issue, which is this issue is edited by P.J. Slinger, who used to be a daily newspaper man at the Capital Times, has some very charming pieces, including a two-page spread about an atheist couple renovating a church into a home. And Dan, that is Audrey Martinovich, who sometimes, she's with Audio for the Arts, and she is sometimes our engineer.
Yeah, with Buzz and with Noah.
And it's quite a saga, and it's really fun, and you want to see the pictures, the photographs. And on the front page, we have a very poignant piece by Tricia Ahmed, and she is the daughter of Abhijit Roy and Bona Ahmed. Abhijit Roy was killed on the streets of Dhaka in 2015. Her mother, Bona, was almost killed. She was initially told both were dead. We had Bona on our show. We were working with her a lot on different projects. But Tricia wrote this very poignant piece. The headline is, "Getting Better is Taking Me So Long, Dad." It's written to him how she misses him and what it's been like 6 years after he was so brutally murdered. It was 2014, I think, or 2015. And we also have a piece by Bona about this. He was killed in February. We reprint an excellent article by legal scholar Erwin Chemerinsky about why we must reshape the federal judiciary. We have a very charming travelogue about the Scopes trial in somebody who visited Dayton, Tennessee recently to see our statue there of Clarence Darrow. So ask for information at fffrf.org.
Or become a member and we will send you the paper every month. Well, thank you for listening. And thank you, Buzz, for producing the show. And thank you to listeners to WOOM in Philadelphia, to WIDE and WMU in Madison, Wisconsin, to WADR in Janesville, Wisconsin, KEOS in Bryan, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL in Vermont and New Hampshire, and WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And to you many thousands of podcast listeners, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends to visit our radio website at ffrf.org/radio.
So join us at the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or ask for information. When you join us, you become part of the largest association of freethinkers in the country. We do so much more than the radio and so much more than our media. We do so much litigation and increasingly lobbying, and you can be a part of the nuns and flexing our muscle. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope